Hello?
This is a collect call from
Life of a Lifer.
To accept this call, press 5 now.
Hello and welcome to Life of a Lifer. This is Cecilia Conley, and today we have a great interview with Jose. Jose, he's currently
this call will be recorded and monitored.
Jose is currently in the state of California. So, Jose, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm happy to be able to speak with you.
Great, Jose. So your sister shared a lot of things that you were doing, a lot of news, and a lot of great things. But instead of me going over it, can you please introduce yourself?
Oh, yeah, no problem. My name is Jose Armendariz. I am 30 years old. I've been incarcerated since I was 16. And right now I'm just currently back in court, awaiting to be resentenced, and hopefully, if all goes well, be able to get the opportunity to return back to society.
Okay. So tell me more about, I know that some states like California recently are like passing new laws or cash laws where they give a second chance to juveniles. So you were 16 years old. So can you tell me more about how it was to get incarcerated at that age and what you have been doing with your time?
So getting incarcerated at that time was definitely tough, to say the least. There was a lot of growing still left to do. And you know, unfortunately, I had to do much of that growing behind bars where it was difficult to find role models that could lead me the right way. And, you know, just basically I was still, you know, caught up in the gang life and not really thinking too much about the future, just basically trying to get by and survive in this place, thinking that, you know, there was only one way of survival, and that was through the gang life. Since then, I'm 30 now, it's been 14 years later. It's been a slow process, you know, growing out of that mindset and trying to become a responsible individual and, you know, hold myself accountable for all the things that I've done, all the mistakes from my past. But it's been a slow process. Unfortunately, this prison system doesn't allow you or give you the opportunity, really, to rehabilitate. You know, we hear a lot about it. We know that they often preach that this is what's going on in the prison system, but it seems like it only affects certain...
This call will be recorded and monitored.
Or it only applies to a certain few, but not to everyone. I went to one of the highest, the maximum security level prisons as soon as I arrived to prison. And, you know, it was tough. It was real tough adapting. It was my first time in jail. And just, you know, I basically saw that there was only one way to survive in a prison like that. But yeah, I mean, so it was a tough process. I'm definitely not the person that I was when, I first was incarcerated. And it's taken a lot of introspection, a lot of reflection, and but you know, right now, I think that people are realizing that the way that they've been dealing with the system's been dealing with juveniles and just people who are incarcerated in general hasn't been working, and we're definitely in the right path. We just need our legislators and our people in power to listen to the people and start making changes that, you know, affect the whole population and not just a certain few.
Yeah, I agree. So, you know, you mentioned something about mentors. Can you tell me more about your mentors, who they are, what they're doing, how they possibly impact your life?
Yeah, well, prison is a place where there's a toxic, hyper-masculine environment, not just mm-hmm. on by the people who are incarcerated, but also by the correctional officers and the staff. You know, everybody feels like patriarchy here in the prison system is very prevalent, very strong, and very, you know, alive, much alive. It's something that, you know, prevents us, you know, young men and people that are in this environment to be vulnerable, to seek help. A lot of us need mental health, mental treatment that we're not receiving. And we feel that when you open yourself up and you try to be vulnerable, you're also opening yourself up to, you know, possibly becoming a target by staff or other guys in here who are also struggling with their own trauma and their own problems. But so, you know, it's been hard to find positive role models, but I've been very lucky that my family has remained supportive, has remained by my side. I've been lucky that I've been able to, you know, reach out to different organizations, and I've made a lot of close acquaintances with others and these people that believe that we deserve a second chance and there's options that are better than incarceration to treat the problems that many of us face. So it's definitely something that's helped me grow, understanding that, yes, I'm accountable for my mistakes. I'm accountable for everything I did wrong. But also that we are oppressed. We are a part of a group that's been oppressed for way too long, where we receive disproportionate sentences compared to others. You know, how the rich are able to walk out.
This call will be recorded and monitored.
Many times never see, you know, the inside of a cell, while others, you know, those of us who are not economically wealthy or, you know, in that standing have to remain behind bars. So just learning from others on the outside, members of the community who believe that we deserve a second chance, has been very helpful to me and just very motivational. It's inspired me. And, you know, like I said, at the end of the day, I hold myself accountable for every single thing I've done. I know that in my past, I've hurt people. My actions have hurt people. So there's not a day that passes where I don't reflect on that. And that's really what motivates me to continue pushing forward and going in the right direction. You know, it's redemption is something that I'm always looking for. You know, I look for it, but it's never with the hope of ever finding it, because I feel that at the point, when you reach the point where you find redemption, it kind of like would make it seem like, okay, now I can relax, you know? But I don't want to get to a point where I'm ever that comfortable, because I know I owe a debt to society. And so my goal is to continue searching for redemption by helping others, by giving back to my community, but also by advocating for those who continue to be oppressed. You know, not just people who are behind bars, but people from the LGBTQ community. You know, the Black Lives Matter movement is something that also reflects on me and my people. You know, I'm a Chicano, so I know what it's like to feel oppression from my angle and my point of view, but also understanding other people's struggles is something that is very important to me. And it's what motivates me to continue going, to continue on the right path and in a positive direction.
Yeah. So, as I say, your sister shares certain articles about you. Could you please talk about any of those articles? What it was about, what you were doing, and how you feel when you were doing that?
Well, one of them was I helped a friend who was facing deportation. He had already served over a decade behind bars. He was pretty much doomed to return back to a country where gang violence was really prevalent and where he would, you know, potentially be murdered because he no longer affiliated with the gangs. I saw myself in him. And so, you know, seeing somebody who, like myself, I used to be a gang member, and seeing him trying to change his life, I in that moment when he, you know, said, "Hey, I'm going to get deported." No, he had no attorneys that wanted to help him. Everybody thought it was a lost cause because of his, you know, past, his record. And they were just, you know, telling him, look, there's people that are being deported for minor traffic infractions and stuff like this. Like, you just got, you just finished doing over a decade behind bars. There's no way you're going to stay in this country. So it definitely, you know, like, I saw his sense of urgency, and I did feel that he truly believed he would die if he returned. And honestly, I had never worked in anything that has to do with immigration. But in 2016, I graduated as a certified paralegal, and I said, hey, look, I'm good at doing legal research. you didn't have anybody, so I said, I'll do what I can, and that's as much as I can promise you. I, you know, started writing motions for him. I started writing arguments to his judge. And, yeah, I mean, it was really something that I, to this day, believe was a miracle, because the fact that the judge was compassionate towards his situation and ended up giving him relief under the it's from what I remember, it's the most, the hardest form of relief that anybody can get through the immigration system, and that was the deferral of removal against the convention, through the Convention Against Torture. And he was able to stay in the country. He was able to remain in the country. He got out. He's doing...
This call will be recorded and monitored.
He's doing very good. He's an example for me that everything is possible, that, you know, just pretty much that if you have faith and you believe that, that you know, and at the end of the day, it's also you. You know, like, how much, like, are you willing to put in, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he sought help. He found help. And that's really what it's about. And I think that when more people open themselves up for help, but there's also people out there in society allowed to give people who are being released an opportunity and judge them by their character, not by their criminal record or their past. It's something that holds a lot of value with us. So basically, you know, when I helped my friend, that was the first time that the first form of advocacy that I had ever, you know, been involved in. But later I met Daisy Ramirez from the ACLU, who deals with, you know, carceral issues in the Orange County jail system here in California. And, you know, through her, she's also the one of the founders of Transforming Justice Orange County, which is an abolitionist organization here in the county, with the goal of pretty much, you know, ending incarceration the way it exists today, and, you know, creating different ways of dealing with people who are behind bars. You know, a lot of dealing with the mental health issues that people are dealing with behind bars, substance abuse issues. And pretty much when I got to meet this new group of people that, you know, pretty enlightened me to things that I wasn't really aware of, you know, like at first I didn't see how I was being oppressed. I didn't understand it. But, you know, receiving education and just getting to meet different advocates, it led me to realize that, yeah, there's a big problem here in America. Just alone, in the United States is the country that incarcerates most people in the world. Currently, mm-hmm. we have about 2.2 million people behind bars. And when you think about some of the most, the countries with very oppressive regimes, like Russia, their current incarceration, carceral population is 418,000. You go to China, their carceral population is 1.6 million, but with three times the population of the...
This call will be recorded and monitored.
Three times the population of that of the United States. So when you put that or you see that in context, and mm-hmm. it makes you realize that we do live in a beautiful country. We live in the country of opportunity that so many people, you know, give their lives to be able to come to this country and you know, experience the American dream. But, you know, it's a very oppressive country. You know, there's racial disparities in sentencing. There's economic disparity. So we do seem to put a lot of focus on these other oppressive regimes in other countries around the world. But I think it's time for there to be real public outrage, you know, and to start seeing that there's problems here in our country. There's real systemic racism is real. And so being able to learn all this stuff and to see things from this perspective led me to understand that even from a cell, I can do more. You know, despite the fact that I'm in a cell nearly 23 hours a day on any given day by myself, you know, a cell that's the size of a small parking space, that the power of the pencil and the power of, you know, of writing is real. And so this led me to unite with members of the ACLU to work on unlocking the vote, which is it's a project that was helping people behind bars who could register to vote to register. And so I helped a lot of guys in here register so that they could vote and mm-hmm. make their voices heard. There was a proposition called Prop 25 that they were also trying to pass, which would eliminate the bail system. And it sounded great, you know, because people shouldn't have to pay to be released, especially for like crimes that other, you know, people who are rich don't see time for. Mm-hmm. But the replacement, what they were trying to replace it with was pretty much a computer system, an algorithm that would determine who would be released based on things like where they lived, if they were employed, mm-hmm. things that we know would affect and impact.
This call will be recorded and monitored.
That would affect and impact Black people and people of color and people who are economically disadvantaged. So mm-hmm. this led me to write the article against Prop 25, which I called treating a venomous bite with poison. So that's pretty much how a lot of my advocacy has come to be, is knowing where my voice can be heard, knowing where an audience that is willing to listen. Because I think a lot of people look at people behind bars and just kind of like brush it off. They don't see the importance behind helping us or trying to change the system. But it is very important to society as a whole because, you know, it creates a cycle of oppression, you know, where people feel like they don't receive the help that they need, you know, return back to society without employment, you know, because they're being held back due to all of these factors and obstacles that are put before them that, you know, doesn't allow them to be able to get fair employment, education, housing. So I think society needs to really focus on what's going on behind bars, because at the end of the day, people are returning back to the streets, and to fix this problem, it's going to take all of us. It's going to take every single one of us. And I think right now, the momentum is on our side, and we have to take advantage of that.
Yes, I agree. So I have a last question for you. I know that you're right now, you are with basically an opportunity for you to get out. So tell me if whenever you get out, because I have hope that you will, what do you plan to do with your time?
Well, I think that
this call will be recorded and monitored.
You know, I have many dreams and aspirations, that's for sure. I feel like there's so much that I can do. And I definitely want to, you know, look into the field of journalism. I love writing. I love writing about issues that affect all of us. And I want to be able to give back in a way that I know will impact society as a whole. You know, I know that if I get out, it's going to be a blessing, something that I did not earn, that I don't feel I earned, but that would be a blessing and that would allow me to be able to give back to society in a way that I probably couldn't. Stuck in a cell, you know, and like I said, I every day I hold myself accountable for everything I've done, and it's something I carry with me, and that is the basis of my inspiration and my motivation to do good. But I definitely want to just continue to enlighten people about the different issues and the many different disparities between people of different races and, you know, the sufferings of people of color and the struggles that the black community go through. Just everything that I've seen, use my experience to be able to tell a story that isn't tainted by politics or, you know, partisanship. Just, you know, the truth and how working together with people who are behind bars and will benefit society as a whole. I think if I'm able to do that, if I'm able to dedicate my life to that and just to live a life of service, then I'll be satisfied with any outcome that comes of my release or, you know, but definitely that's my goal is to continue working to help others and just being able to tell the story of the people that aren't able to speak for themselves or that are silenced through oppression.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for coming to our podcast. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with the public?
Just, you know, for those of you who care, I know there's many of you out there. Just always keep in mind that together, if you have been oppressed in any way or form, and you look at other groups that are also being oppressed, when we advocate for each other, when we unite and we fight together, not with violence, but with peace, we're always going to be the majority. There will be no minority. There will be no minorities. We will be the majority, and we will be the move.
This call will be recorded and monitored.
The movement that will cause real change to exist. So if in any way you have ever been oppressed, we must stop oppressing other groups that are also oppressed. Instead, we must unite. And I know that working together, we can all bring change, not just to the carceral system, but to, you know, the systemic racism that we currently see in our country. And yeah. Thank you for giving me the opportunity also.
Thank you for coming. I wish you the best. I personally believe in second chances. I don't believe in life sentences. So I really hope that you get your freedom sooner rather than later. I really hope so. And we're going to be praying for you. Okay?
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody. It was Life for Lifer. Until next time.